So welcome, everybody. My name is Jim D. I'm a compulsive overeater and alcoholic with other addictions. Welcome to Outside Issues, a panel of five groups, most of us, as far as I know, inspired by secular AA, to whom we owe a great debt. And we've all developed secular communities to deal with other addictions. We're going to have presentations by these different leaders in these fellowships. They'll each take 10 minutes to describe what's going on in their part of the world. I'll begin just qualifying myself, but then we'll have the secular communities of Al-Anon, NA, ACA, OA, and CODA. So there are five different fellowships, each of whom will have 10 minutes. Sometimes it'll be one speaker, sometimes it'll be two. And then there'll be time after that, those presentations for question and answer from the audience. I think, Kyle, I mean, actually we didn't go, I was told we could. Does that work?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll just say a little bit about myself. I'm a compulsive overeater. There are different kinds. People get that, you know, addiction different ways. Personally, I really didn't have, I had an abusive childhood, like many of us, but I didn't use food until I was a Marine. I was in combat in Vietnam. And when I came back, I had been a blackout binge drinker since high school. And when I came back, I switched really unawarely from binge drinking. I knew I couldn't keep binge drinking. I had another year in the Marine Corps. And I started overeating to deal with the leftover effects of being in combat. And I put on 70 pounds within a couple of years. And so I spent 50 years trying to get rid of that weight, struggling with that addiction, 30 of them in OA. So I found OA relatively early, but I was an atheist by that time in my life. People kept telling me, so I basically yo-yo dieted for 30 years in OA while people told me that God was eventually going to take care of my addiction. It was only when I found secular AA and began to realize you could do a peer program without having the religious part. And I helped get this fellowship that you'll hear more about later, secular fellowship, going. That I was able to finally get abstinent. I never was abstinent for even a year over those 30 years. And now I've, largely because of the service I do in secular OA, I've gotten rid of that weight, below the weight when I started, and I've kept it off for 4.5 years. So it works. Works without God. And I'm going to let the speakers introduce themselves. And I think the first one I said was secular Al-Anon. And I think, Chia, you were going to go first. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Sheila and I are here on behalf of secular Al-Anon, one of the newest of the secular fellowships. We now have 5 Zoom meetings a week. 4 of them are published on Al-Anon's worldwide list. I will talk about my attempts to start a secular Al-Anon meeting in Idaho, and Sheila will talk about her attempts to start one in San Francisco. Sheila, what made you decide to try that?
Hi, I'm Sheila, and I had been involved with secular AA for many years and attended all these conventions since the first one in Malibu. And so I was attending regular Al-Anon meetings, but secular AA, and at the conventions, I was able to attend Al-Anon meetings there and realized that it was possible and that it might be something that I could try doing in San Francisco. Although my story is going to be the failure one and next to Chia's success. I didn't try all that hard. I went to people that I knew were like the mainstay of the central office of San Francisco Al-Anon and was told like point blank, recovery is not possible without God and there's no way this is going to happen. And I didn't really have, I don't know, both like the person, I didn't even think to persevere. COVID came along, and in the efforts to find online meetings, I think I had heard about but not listened to an interview with Kim from the Boise meeting on some website, and so I had it in my mind that it was possible, and then I found Chia's website and wound up connecting with Secular Al-Anon program. So I'm very grateful for that. I think Chia's story, and I'd like to, you know, Chia, would you speak to what you did and how you were able to succeed, and you know what went into that?
Yeah, that discouragement that you talk about, where you're just told point blank that you can't do it. People had tried starting secular Al-Anon meetings in various places all over for years. There's a whole history of failed attempts, and most of them failed because they didn't get into Al-Anon's published list. People didn't find them, and the secular Al-Anon in their community was not robust enough, and the word didn't get out. And that was what was happening to us before COVID. Is I knew from my experience with AA that secular recovery works. I mean, I was 30 some years sober at that point. So my partner in crime, Kim, and I just said, we're starting a meeting, whether you list it or not. But because we weren't listed, people weren't finding us. And Boise is not a big enough place. Al-Anon is not a big enough fellowship. And after a few one-person meetings, I was about ready to throw in the towel. And it was only because COVID came along that we survived.
How so? How?
Well, it was people like you who went out looking for meetings online. So we put the meeting on Zoom, and I made a website. That was the best thing I did. I made a website. I gave the link to some secular Al-Anon or some secular AA sites. We are so indebted to AA for the help in getting off the ground. And like you, people heard the podcast, thanks to John S. And they started finding us, even though at that point, we were just two meetings. There was the meeting in Boise and one in Lawrence, Kansas.
Did you ever get discouraged? I mean, because I know you put a lot of effort into, you know, getting the program listed with the the central office, and it took a lot. I just want to give you a lot of credit for persevering, I think, in a way that it was really required to be successful.
Yeah, certainly anyone who goes up against this kind of resistance needs perseverance and patience. I mean, I had to, you know, kind of take a deep breath and understand that I was in for a long process. And that Kansas meeting, they got listed early on. They called theirs Any Faith or None. And I didn't like that, because if I saw it in a listing, I would not say, oh, atheist friendly. And I think I was wrong about that, because they've been thriving, and we met for 3 years before we got listed. So I probably should have settled for Any Faith or None, but I held out, and eventually we thought of Not a Religious Program, and they had to accept that. It's a quote from their own literature. So we're now listed under that name. The other thing that really helped in that long, you know, three Valley Forge winners is that at some point I got on the phone with one of these people in the main office that I had been trading emails with, the personal, you know, the verbal conversation just made all the difference in the world. When this was not some faceless people who just seemed to be telling me no. Every time I tried to comply with their demands, I was told, no, you failed again. And I got her on the phone, and eventually, you know, I was like, you know, so are you trying to prevent us from getting listed? And she was like, oh, no. And I mean, I misunderstood. I expected an organized sort of response from this office. No, it's a big bureaucracy and no one's in control. And when I spoke with her, I just tried to understand her position, her efforts, her powers, her limitations. I didn't challenge her, demand anything, try to persuade her of anything. I think really respect wins a lot more allies than reason. People don't reason themselves into a belief in God. I'm not going to reason them out. But when she felt that I cared about her and her situation and her difficulties, she just warmed up about 50 degrees. And by the end of that conversation, she had agreed something she was going to try to push for us from inside that structure. And it made all the difference. I wasn't, you know, quite so much stranded in Siberia anymore. So that really helped. I don't know. What about you, Sheila? Do you think you might try again in a post-COVID San Francisco?
Maybe. But I'm enjoying the participation in the online meetings. So I'll see. I do want there to be secular meetings for especially for young people, because I think that it's very clear that young people are not, you know, that are not as religious, and I would hate to think that there are people who, you know, could so benefit from the program who'll get turned away because of the God factor and the religious language and the prayers and things that feel alienating when there's so much of worth, you know, to people to get. So I consider that like part of my general service commitment to, so I guess I should move ahead and do that. It just that there's, oops, a lot going on. We had thought about saying a little bit about, I lost my train, about whether rejecting the words atheist and secular and the naming of the group. I don't know if that might be helpful to other people thinking about starting groups in other programs.
I think actually we need to hand off to Ken.
Okay, all right.
Ken from NA is gonna talk next. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, sorry, that seemed a little bit abrupt. I didn't have this time thing set up terribly well.
And there'll be time for question and answers later, We can cycle back.
Thanks, Jim. And thanks very much, Jim, for being the main organizer of this, kind of historic event. I know we did it one time before, but I think this time it's quite different because things have advanced so far and you know, we've all grown so much because of the pandemic and because of the advent of online accessibility. So I'm Ken, I'm an addict, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't have any official role. We don't actually have an organizational structure in Secular Narcotics Anonymous. I kind of self-appointed myself to do this, but I did lobby a whole bunch of the other, you know, kind of key people within the organization. So it is a type of a group conscience, but it's fairly ad hoc. You know, there's a thing in one of the NA readings where it says we ought never be organized, and everybody always goes, no problem, you know, it shouldn't be a problem. So I come from Tasmania, which is an island at the south of Australia, for all that you people in America who don't who struggle a bit with geography, perhaps. I'm not sure. But anyway, so look, you know, I just very briefly, I was a pot smoker and a drinker, and I took medication from psychologists and psychiatrists, which I abused on top of those things. And I ended up in psych wards 4 times. I also had a sort of history of unfortunate interference, or, you know, whatever interaction from an adult that was way off the rails and didn't help me in my coming into adulthood. Certainly threw me into a lot of confusion. And anyway, so I ended up, you know, very, very unwell and very, very depressed, very isolated, very confused, and totally unable to strategically think of anything in terms of a solution. At around 28, I did some AA, and then I went back out smoking pot again, and eventually I found Narcotics Anonymous. And I moved from Tasmania to the mainland of Australia and went to Melbourne, because that's where NA was, and I stayed clean. And I did a lot of service over the years. I stayed clean for a long, long time. And I'm just trying to cut to the chase, because I always struggled with the God stuff. I'm not a believer who fell back. Prior to 2014, I'd read I'm not sure if Mario Hornbacker's book Waiting, it was a pivotal moment in my recovery when I read that book, and I had also discovered AA Agnostica online because I'd been looking everywhere for something like this, and there was certainly nothing in NA that I knew of, and so I saw on AA Agnostica the publicity around the first secular AA convention in Santa Monica in 2014, and I was the only Australian who went to that. I haven't had a lot of sleep. I got up at 4 a.m. to start doing this conference. My dog's been sick, and I'm a bit emotional at the moment. So I'm going to struggle through. Bear with me, because there's quite a bit to cover. So if I just, you know, talk too rapidly, I'm sorry about that. But so I went to the convention in Santa Monica, and I met a lot of wonderful people, and I found out about secular AA. And I also met some people. There's even one of them here in the room tonight, or this morning, whatever, who was there, who was also an NA person who was seeking a solution to the problem of being a non-believer in a very, you know, religious culture that exists within, you know, most mainstream 12-step meetings. Doesn't matter what variety you go to. You know, it's all about, you know, in America, you've even got to put up with the Lord's Prayer, for heaven's sake, you know, which is kind of perplexing, really, because it wouldn't happen in Australia. But anyway, so I went to that convention. That's 5 minutes already. And I came back to Australia, and me and my friend Anthony, who sadly passed away last year from COVID, or was it this year? I think it was this year, actually. We started the first secular NA meeting in Melbourne in around 2015, and that ran continuously until the pandemic a couple of years ago. And at that point, we moved online, and this is where things really started to happen. You know, we went to Zoom meetings, and I found out about these dudes in Seattle who also had a secular meeting that had been face to face for quite a few years. And there was one in London that was also a face-to-face secular, but none of us were in touch, you know. In 2015, we did have a Facebook group, and we started doing Zoom meetings for secular NA, but that was just UK and Australia, really. So anyway, with the pandemic, we all got together, and the Facebook group started to grow, and I'd registered secularna.org. Back in 2014, even though I had no knowledge of setting up a website, I just thought, I'm going to park this because it's going to be useful. And I met a wonderful guy, Mike E. from Seattle, and he set up a website using that domain name, and things started to really flourish, because we got the online meetings onto the website and onto the Facebook group, and in a way that was accessible and easy because of the time zone thing, which is a real problem for a lot of people, and it certainly was for me. we publish the meeting information with the relevant time zone, so you can just go there and see what time it is, where it is, and what day it is, because it's Sunday here. You know what I mean? Where I am, you know, it's Saturday where you are. It's a strange thing living on a basketball, you know. So in that first year that we were starting to grow, my good friend Roger, who set up the AA Agnostica website, he published an article about that Mike wrote, and he also put up a link to our website on Secular AA, AA Agnostica website. And so it just really started moving at that point. At this stage, we have 21 meetings going each week. There's four in Brazil that are in Portuguese. There are three in French-speaking meetings in France. There's one in Russia, I believe. And there's a secular women's meeting and a secular rainbow meeting. So all of these things are really easily accessible. If you just go and have a look at it's just secularna.org. If you just type in secularna into your Google, it'll find it really easily. And we have a Facebook group which is called the Secular NA Coffee Shop, which I modelled after the Secular AA Coffee Shop, because it was the same type of thing. It's an informal place where people just can go and canvas various issues or talk to each other and also to easily find the meeting information. So look, there's a whole lot more that I wanted to say. In terms of our organisation, as I said, we're not terribly organised, but we're doing the main things, which is getting the meeting information out there and allowing people to connect with each other. There's a World Convention of NA in 2024, which is in Washington, D.C., WCNA 38, and we've been in touch with World Services of NA, and there's a very good chance that there will be a secular NA meeting or workshop at that World Convention, which will be a huge pivot. Let me just have a look. The other thing that's kind of interesting is NA literature is really problematic, because it's full of, you know, it's full of God and grace and prayer and all those miracles. There's a lot of use of the word miracles, and so it's a real frustration, and it's very hard to change things. And we're kind of a minority, non-believers are kind of a minority, and particularly in America, where most of NA exists, you know, it's a very religiously dominated. Recently, there's been a new publication put out, which is called Spiritual Principle of Day. So it kind of replaces the JFT, which is the Just for Today, which the more cynical amongst us used to call the Jesus for Today, because it does also have a lot of content which is religious. So the thing about this new publication is it's very progressive. It's, you know, for the most part, maybe 1 in 8 or something, 1 in 10 might have a bit of higher power. There's not a lot of the he God, you know, which is so offensive, the he part of the God and the God. Not offensive, that's probably the wrong thing to put on it. But so that's really interesting, and it can all be found. You can find the Spiritual Principle of Day thing on the NAWS website and then our World Services website. So that's about all I've got. That's my time. So look, I'm certainly happy to answer questions. And just one other thing I wanted to say is, at the moment in our Facebook group, we've got 695 members. So let's get it to 700 today. Come on. Thanks.
Ken, thanks so much. And now we do Jill and Elaine with WEAG Gnostic, I believe. Jill, you go first.
Hi, thank you. Elaine and I are going to co-present, if that's okay. I'll start. My name is Jill, and I'm a recovering adult child and grandchild of alcoholics and a dysfunctional family.
Hi, my name is Elaine, and I'm a recovering adult child and grandchild of alcoholics and a dysfunctional family as well. And we're here to talk about our fellowship, Be Agnostics Virtual Intergroup, of adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families, and we shorten that to ACA or ACOA. A little bit about me. ACA is my only direct experience with 12-step programs, and I've never been to an in-person meeting. In November 2020, a friend shared the laundry list with me and invited me to a meeting she wanted to try. And I really identified with the traits in the laundry list, which is also expressed as the problem. I started attending a weekly virtual meeting of a local ACA fellowship here in Toronto that had been meeting in person but went online due to COVID. And in January 2022, after being, you know, after attending weekly meetings for about a year and really experiencing recovery, I went looking for another meeting. I don't know if I was bored or just wanted to kick it up a notch, but I searched the ACA meeting finder and using the keyword secular, and I found the Tuesday 7 a.m. express check-in and just kept showing up. And now I attend up to 4 meetings a week, offering service as a member of the meeting safety team. Jill?
Hi again. In 2007, I saw online the ACA laundry list, which are the traits of an adult child, and I cried when seeing them with recognition. I had known for a long time that I needed better adult coping skills, and since I had a hard time finding any ACA in my area, North Carolina, I attended a Big Kids Al-Anon meeting fairly regularly from 2007 to 2013. And my late Al-Anon sponsor was a wonderful woman. She was very Christian and her God was nurturing and forgiving. But however much I tried adopting her faith, I did find some balance in Al-Anon, but the religious reference just did not work for me. And now I guess I realize that my PTSD and my perceived judgment that I found with the religious references didn't make for companions that were compatible in my recovery. So I moved further away from where the meeting was and eventually stopped going. Then in January of this year, I hit my personal bottom and I started attending the AA meetings daily, virtually. And ironically enough, Easter Sunday, I went to a secular AA meeting at the Pigeon's Roost in Tempe, Arizona. And it was there that I first heard of Beyond Belief instead of the Big Blue Book and the idea of secular recovery. And at the same time, a friend from years ago, I'd reached out to a friend from that Al-Anon meeting and she agreed to sponsor me, but suggested that I do try ACA now that it was available through Zoom. So soon after, one Friday morning, I found a We Agnostics ACA meeting called Coffee with the Stoics. And after one meeting, really, I felt as though I had found my recovery group. I now regularly attend up to 5 meetings each week. I chair whenever possible, and I'm working to become more computer literate so that I can do more things to help our groups flourish. But I find that in secular recovery, I feel much more authentic, much safer, and again, I'm finding some recovery and some balance. Elaine?
Thanks, Jill. So just a little bit of background, a little timeline about how We Agnostics started. In 2019, an in-person meeting started up in Indianapolis, Indiana, in the U.S. It did tend towards secularism, but was not specifically identified as such in the ACA meeting list. In early 2020, two members of that fellowship, JB and CB, branched off and started rewriting the ACOA steps to use more inclusive language from secular and gender perspectives. They started a telephone meeting in early 2020, like January, February kind of thing. In March 2020, with the pandemic lockdowns, they started hearing about more people using Zoom. So after a quick group conscience taken at the third or fourth meeting, the meeting went virtual. Through 2020, they added a couple of more, maybe up to three by the new year. And in January 2022, We Agnostics was up to five meetings a week, and very diverse meetings. At around that time, the Discord, we started up a Discord server to stay in touch and build community outside of meetings, just to have a little bit of chit chat and connect, sort of like a telephone, like a phone number exchange, that kind of thing. But no ads, way less tracking. And I heard somebody mention Facebook, and I think that if it had been Facebook, I just wouldn't be participating. But I was familiar with the Discord platform and quite comfortable and finding a lot of connections through that. Today, in late 2022, we're up to nine meetings. Each is quite different and takes full advantage of ACA's open literature policy. For example, on Wednesday mornings, we read one motion at a time from the book Atlas of the Heart by Brené Brown. Friday is, Jill mentioned, Coffee with the Stoics, usually focusing on meditations by Marcus Aurelius, but Stoic philosophers of all sorts. The step meetings study each of five versions of the 12 steps of ACOA, always being mindful of reducing, you know, adapting the language to be more secular. And we feel that makes a safe, we agnostics, a really safe place for recovery. Jill?
Yes, I'll further that, because we agnostics doesn't do any kind of gatekeeping, and everyone's welcome, whether they self-identify as a person of faith, a free thinker, an agnostic. It doesn't matter. And in our group conscience, we practice knowledge-based decision making, which means that every question is answered prior to a motion being made, which helps everyone understand the reasoning behind any group's decision-making. We very much honor the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts as guide to our group conscience. And we are constantly working actively on what does and doesn't work for our different members. We honor all traumas and dysfunctions. We said no one's excluded. No one is made to turn on their Zoom video. We're a safe place for people to come out of isolation and start to build connection through the meetings and through the virtual community on Discord. And we feel as though in place of requiring a power higher than ourselves, religious or otherwise, that by building this connection, we can help each other and get support through fellow travelers, for instance, and sponsorship and or for our adult child issues. Language is important, and we find that it can make recovery harder when words are used in the rooms that have negative associations for people with specific traumas. So in our fellowship, we seek to include all types of survivors of family dysfunction. And in developing our meeting scripts and other secular literature, we're mindful of the power of specific words that have traumatized people again with experience, say, of armed conflict. We we substitute the word activated for triggered. We're inclusive of people who've suffered religious abuse or have come out of cults or spiritual abuse. We've dropped the word crosstalks, and we refer to people who would disrupt meetings instead of Zoom bombers, for instance. So we just try and realize the power of words, and our mainstay is helping people find recovery from whatever their childhood traumas were. Elaine, we found our relationship with ACA as is a bit strained because we resist what we would refer to as prescriptive approaches, and we focus on people telling us how they're feeling and how they're seeking recovery, and let everybody kind of find it in their own way. Again, we refer to traditions and concepts, but we don't subscribe to one right way to recover or to the idea that a higher power is required for recovery. So thank you. I think we're putting our website info and our meeting schedule into the chat. And thank you for allowing us to be heard and participate. Thanks for your service.
Great. that was wonderful. And next we're going to hear from Jenny from Secular Overeaters, and she's going to leave a couple of minutes at the end for me to do some administrative stuff. Jenny?
Hi, everybody. My name is Jenny. I'm a compulsive eater and sugar addict. I've been a member of OA for 6.5 years. And I've been an atheist my whole life. And it was a real struggle for me to come to a 12-step program. I had been with my sister when she went to a adult children of alcohol meeting. I went with her, and I just could not get past all that religious language. And so it took me a really long time. I didn't come into the programs till I was 56 years old, but I was really desperate, so I came. And I'm really lucky because I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there happened to be 2 Freethinker meetings already existing in Emeryville, which is the home of Pixar. And they were modeled after 2 Alcoholics Anonymous Freethinker meetings in San Francisco. So we basically, somebody before me had taken their script and their steps and, you know, their secular literature suggestions, and we were using those during our meetings. And so I was lucky to have a secular approach from the beginning. These were face-to-face meetings. And when you would go to the OA website, they did have a tag where, you know, meetings, atheist agnostic meetings were allowed, but there weren't very many of them. And I think there was only one other meeting at the time where I first started, and it was a phone meeting that had been around for maybe 15 years called Unconventional Spirituality. But anyway, we were, you know, just kind of tootling along, having a great meeting. More and more people were coming. And one day somebody from outside of our area came to the meeting, and he was really upset because we were not using the traditional 12 steps. And he reported us to our region, and the region person, you know, called up our intergroup chair, and our intergroup chair called us up, and we were like, well, yes, we're using outside steps. And he was like, well, you guys are going to be delisted if you keep doing that, which delisting pretty much means your meeting is kicked out. Not only does it mean that you're not going to have your meeting listed on websites, but we also would not be able to, you know, get insurance for renting rooms that you need when you're a nonprofit. There's like a whole domino effect about this. So even though it took us 3 months of a lot of back and forth with our inner group, we finally decided to stay with NOA. And I have to say that it's interesting to me that like every fellowship seems that even though we all kind of maybe came from AA, I just assumed, you know, Overeaters Anonymous was run just like AA was run. But AA is okay with groups deciding, you know, each meeting gets to decide through group conscience, through tradition 4, how they want to run the meeting, if they want to use outside literature, and that's okay with them. But that's not how it works in OA. They're very conservative about this, and they see using outside literature as a threat to their very being. And it was just shocking to me. So our group decided to stay within OA because we wanted to have a home for other atheists and agnostics. And we just changed our meeting. We didn't read any steps at all. Apparently that's allowed. And we started doing other things like having speakers or having an ask it basket, having a slogan discussion, doing anything we could find that would be okay with OA, but not trigger us as atheists and agnostics. So this whole thing about being delisted kind of came around the same time that Jim started a meeting and the host here, and his meetings were in Bethesda, Washington. And so he is really great about reaching out to people and bringing us all together. And so he had called me up on the phone and I'm like, oh, great, there's more meetings, but big deal. You know, you're all the way in Washington. Washington, D.C. I'm never going to see you, you know, whatever. And then COVID hit. And, you know, like a lot of people are saying, it was a real boon for our organization. And we, you know, in 2 years, we've gone from having, I think we had 5 face-to-face meetings and maybe 2 phone meetings or 1 phone meeting, to having 25 Zoom meetings. And it's really wonderful to be able to have, you know, be with people from all across the world. We don't get that many Australians because the time zone changes like really different, but we have had a few people from Australia. But even so, it's like cool to have people, you know, from Germany and Sweden, like come to our meetings and stuff. And I've just love the fact that we've been able to branch out. But this still, I personally was just really very upset with, you know, how are people who are atheists and agnostic and OA going to be able to find out about these resources if we're not allowed to talk about them at meetings? And so another person from the Freethinker meeting and I had talked about starting a website, but because of COVID, we were already like juggling a lot, trying to figure out how to do Zoom and everything. But then like later on during the summer, we were invited to come speak with some other secular Zoom meetings at our virtual regional conference. And I met up with Jim again and with some other people, and 6 of us decided, hey, we want to do something for secular people. And we decided to do a website together. And we did some fundraising so we could pay for it. And it's just really taken off since then. And our website is not connected with Overeaters Anonymous. They don't want to have any relationship with us. We are considered an outside resource and outside issue, but that's really great because now we have the freedom to talk about whatever we want to. And we've grown from we have a mailing list for our newsletter. It's almost 900 people now. And we have a Facebook group. We also offer Zoom rooms for meetings if they need a place to meet. And about 3/4 of our meetings are on the Zoom rooms that Overeaters Anonymous has put together. We have a Google group. We do workshops. I think one of our biggest challenges right now is that we don't have enough secular sponsors. And so we've been trying to do a lot of workshops to help develop sponsors. I don't think we invented it, but we've been really promoting this idea of accountability buddies. And so you can, you know, meet up with someone else who's also a secular person and you can help each other out either by, you know, just talking when you're having issues. So we've been trying to develop resources in that way. I think I may have said everything I wanted to say. And I know that we also worked on some publications, and Jim will talk about the Food Freedom Recovery Workbook. But I think, Jim, I'll just let you take it from there. Because Jim is part of the secular OA Service Board, which is an official OA organization. So you want to go ahead and talk?
Yeah, my apologies. My camera has stopped. So that is a still picture. Really, props when she says there's a website. Jenny really is a webmaster and has done a wonderful job. I can't do my video. My camera's not working. So there is a Kyle is going to post some stuff in there. There is this food freedom manual. For some of us, we kind of just say, no, it isn't so much the steps. It's social support, a food plan or a plan for your addiction, self-care, and service. And those four kind of pillars have to be combined in kind of an action plan. So we've got a manual that we're developing. And if you want to work through it with us, we're starting another 16-week course a week from Sunday. And in the chat eventually, yeah, I guess it's there now, is a sign up for that if you want to come and work through this manual. It's I think it's useful for a lot of addictions, but this one is focused on overeating. And there are two things I wanted to say in addition. One is the Secular Service Board. They have a thing in OA called Special Focus Service Boards, which were used to be for language groups, like all the meetings that spoke French or Spanish would have a board that kind of supported them. And a few years ago, they decided to open it up more generally, in particular for us, actually, for atheist, agnostic, secular, but also for LGBTQTIA and BIPOC and men. So we now have an official OA thing called a Secular Service Board. I'm the chair of it. And we knew we needed to have something that was clean for OA that could get us around this obsession with conference-approved literature and following all the rules and stuff. So I got stuck with the job of being the clean guy. So we have this thing that doesn't have any conference, non-conference literature on it. And that's there in the chat box, the Secular Service Board, to get in touch with us. And the last thing I just wanted to say is that we, in the meetings that I've set up to try and get around this craziness in OA and probably others, is we have a meeting for a half hour and say, this is the official OA meeting. And then the next 15, you know, if next half hour, next 15 is secular. And we read Beyond Belief and we share literature like our website. We don't know whether it's going to stand the test of time. Jenny is a little skeptical and it may not. But for now, that's one way of getting around in these more rigid fellowships that, you know, you have your official meeting. Because generally in socializing one-on-one sponsor, you can use any damn thing you want to, and at least in OA. Okay, so the last group is Matt from a Secular Coda.
Start my clock. I'll keep track. I tend to talk too long. Hi, I'm Matt. I've been known to suffer from codependency in my life. I'm careful about wearing labels because I think they can't be taken off. So it's one of the things that I like, and one of the innovations we made is to not have to wear a label if you choose not to. I don't want to talk too long about myself because I really feel like it's not so much about me. It's really not at this point. You know, I've been going to codependency stuff for a number of years prior to the pandemic, but it really was, like I heard from a lot of the other speakers, the pandemic that made it possible, which is curious to me that such a good things can come from such a dark, dark time. It actually, that's when maybe the greatest growth happens. We had a huge opportunity for change, and it looks like many of us jumped on it, including me. I found during the same problem, you know, once CODA went online with the pandemic, I found it really religious. The religious element really just became really prominent and just in my face in a way that it hadn't been when it was in person. And I found that just off-putting. I found it countering. It was people arguing my truth and such, and I just couldn't tolerate it. And I found, you know, secular AA literature, and it saved me. Honestly, it gave me really the permission that I needed to go forward and try to do something myself. And I started with nothing. I just wanted a group to really read some secular AA literature with me, and just, I didn't have a real grand plan, which I think really worked out for the best in the long run. I didn't come at it like I was going to subvert CODA, and I still haven't, actually. Of all the groups, that we're the only ones really that have no connection whatsoever really directly to the original 12-step group that kind of spurred it. So I don't have any contact with CODA, and I'm grateful for it. Actually, I was worried in the beginning because when I first started saying kind of heretical things, honestly, like, I'm not sure higher power is necessary for recovery, you know, 3-4 years into it, still never having accepted it and feeling, you know, some benefits of the program, that the higher power really isn't necessary. And people didn't want to hear that. They still don't. So it's still the case that we have to fight against, you know, that belief, but really we don't have to so much. It's possible that we don't need necessarily them anymore. I never went to CODA and asked for permission to do anything. I checked around in the home groups that I'd been going to, and I asked them, you know, if anyone would join me. And sure enough, plenty of people were interested. The people who were there with entrenched interests had no real desire to see any of that happening, and you know, mocked the whole idea, told me that it would never succeed. You can't have the recovery without God. You just can't have it. And it's turned out not to be true. And I came across a quote today that I thought was really apropos. It says, this is Schopenhauer. He said, "All truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as being self-evident." I think about everything, you know, the great progress and things that have gone on throughout human history, it's always come out as being something ridiculous, where people are like, that can't possibly be true. Yet it turns out to be true. You think of things like string theory and quantum mechanics and the way that the world actually works when we get down to it. And it sounds ridiculous, but it turns out to be true. The way that the real world actually works is stranger than fiction. So when we counter against somebody with entrenched interests and decades of books and things, and just like the accumulation of tradition and forever and ever, and it just becomes this giant snowball that's unbearable for anybody. You can't change the direction of it. It's just, I decided from the beginning I wasn't going to try. And I'm grateful that I did, because in retrospect, you know, I was really worried when they told me that I wouldn't be able to achieve the recovery that they had. You won't be able to do it. The most wonderful thing happened, though. They were so right, but that was the best gift. The recovery that they have isn't as good as what you can have in a secular recovery, because in a secular recovery without the higher power, you can say, I did it. I did the work. I'm proud of myself for doing all of this work. Me and my friends and our community together, we moved forward. Without any imaginary creations, without giving away credit to things, without calling ourselves powerless. Powerless. You don't need to ask a codependent if they're powerless. They all know powerlessness. Everyone knows powerlessness, and we don't want it anymore. Don't want to have to continue to go to a meeting and call myself powerless. At the end of the recovery process, you should feel powerful, empowered. That's what we want today. So to me, you know, it's great that we can move on. Honestly, the CODA book is dated. It's from the early 90s, and it looks like it, smells like it, sounds like it. You know, I'm a software person. I'm a software engineer, and many of you may know about software and encounter software on a regular basis that doesn't work. Suddenly something that you had might stop working briefly for a while, and maybe it'll fix itself again later and without you even knowing about it. That's you interacting with software where things are breaking. But that's the nature of change. Like, you cannot change things. You cannot make them better without changing them. It's simply not possible. There is nothing perfect in this world either. So these things are true. You can't have a perfect thing. There's no such thing as a perfect thing. Therefore, everything is worth changing at least a little. There's always room for improvement. So that's the trouble for me with all these really rigid organizations. It's like, you found perfection already? Already you found it? Like, that's amazing. What else are you going to do now? Are you just going to stay there? Like, no one will accept being static. Why do we have static organizations and static structures and perfect for all time? Nothing survives without change. That's why I know, and I'm not even worried about it. I'm not worried about changing them, because I know they're going to have to come along here. It's not going to be able to go on. Say, my lifetime, I've got another good 40 years left. Okay. Do you think the CODA book can continue another 40 years without any change whatsoever? I doubt it. we don't have to worry about the destination. We can already build what the destination looks like without ever having to involve changing them, because we're innovating, and we read literature from any source that suits the members, you know, whatever works for anybody. I had really interesting thoughts, and I often have some interesting thoughts about the applicability in general of this work and its importance to just humanity in general, that there's a real shortage for people, secular-minded, atheists, agnostic people who are not willing to tow the old books and drag them around like dead weight. We don't have anywhere to go. We don't have places. We don't have communities. We don't have anywhere for us to hang out, share, to be together, to feel together. These religious people, they've got it all set up. They thought about that for thousands of years. That's cool. We need similar structures in this world, where we can get together and befriend each other and share. I mean, I heard from many of the other hosts that are addressing problems outside really of the domain. Like, what is codependency these days? I don't even really know. Like, it has never been defined. Intentionally, it's very vague. So it often overlap with many of the other communities who are working on similar things. Like, it really seems there's a huge opportunity from this work and from all these people being together to really like unite over a purpose of helping people feel better. Really, at the end of the day, yeah, there's particular problems that people struggle with, and there are all types of varieties, obviously, that are particular suffering, but at the end of the day, it's all suffering. We in codependency are really focused on relationships, but relationships are pretty much something that every person deals with in one form or another. So you can't live without relationships. So anyone who's here, you know, my goal is to continue spreading the light for codependents everywhere so that they have a place to go. People who don't fit and don't fit into the mold and aren't willing to absorb someone else's and accept someone else's teachings as their truth, that there's a place to go, safe places where you can share and be accepted and learn and grow and become self-empowered and learn who it is you are again. So we have meetings almost every day of the week. Atheist Codependent is my website that I started for the group. There's a lot of people involved now though, so I can't take credit for everything. So that's about all the time I had. I just wanted to share all that. It's a very hopeful vision to me, and I'm very hopeful from what I heard today. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to share and listen and hear everybody's stories. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Matt, for everything in general and for me personally, for the support you've given me. We've got time, a lot of time, was the plan, for a question and answer. I think you can all just speak up and ask questions. I'm of the view that generally people are asking questions. When they're asking questions, they're also expressing stuff. So Ken, I'd ask you to time people for a minute and let them know when their question is kind of gone over that. And raise your hand in the reaction thing, and I'll call on you in the order that I see. I forget how that. Yeah, I think that works. Lewis?
Yeah, hi. I'm in a secular group. It's my first fellowship of any kind. And the group announces itself as secular and welcomes people regardless of belief or lack of belief, and or non-belief, that is. And I see some tension there, but not just in theory, but occasionally in practice. To me, sometimes it feels like we are in effect telling people, believers, you are welcome here, to go screw yourselves, because we have quite a bit of trauma, people who need to talk about their religious trauma. We have people like me who have more intellectual or theoretical objections and aren't afraid to pipe up. We have people who in the same group who think that there ought to be greater tolerance, even among ourselves, toward believers. I'm wondering if anybody else sees any of the kind of tension that I think exists, and whether there's anything to be done about it.
Louis, do you want to address that, or any of the presenters have a minute or so they want to respond to that, and then we'll get to other questions?
Jim, we actually have somebody in the room who is a believer who attends We Agnostics, and I could ask her if she'd be willing to talk about it.
Whoever you are, do you want to talk for a minute about that?
Can I say something?
Go ahead, Jenny.
You know, I've found this tension in OA where the Freethinker meetings are open to everybody. We say, you know, doesn't matter. And it's not strictly atheist agnostic, but we do say in our script in the beginning, you know, we introduce the meeting and talk about how it's open to atheists and agnostics. And, you know, we try and set that up. But I know other meetings, you know, specifically say that this is a special focus meeting to, for atheists and agnostics, so that at least people who are there who may not fit that, they're more aware of the audience. I don't know. Pass.
Who was the designated believer?
Julianne, were you thinking of me?
I was. Would you like to speak to that?
Hi, my name is Karen. I'm an adult child, and I actually take a bit of an issue with being identified as a believer because my experience in the years that I've been attending 12-step meetings has been quite transformative in terms of whatever it is that we refer to when we talk about the higher power of our understanding. And I did come into recovery with a very specific belief in a personal God, and that is not where I stand today. I was very fortunate to find my way into recovery in a community that was extremely diverse when it came to different belief systems, different traditions of faith, different philosophies that were represented in the meetings I started going to in the DC area. What I appreciate about secular recovery is that there is a more honest attempt to articulate the experiences that are frequently labeled as religious or spiritual experiences or God moments in more conventional recovery. And I just find that intellectually more honest and actually more helpful for my personal recovery when I'm able to get to that degree of honesty. And to me, my understanding of my higher power when I started attending meetings over 10 years ago is no longer relevant to my life today. And I don't know what my understanding of my higher power will be tomorrow. So I am very careful about making any kind of proclamations about whether God or a higher power is necessary for recovery or not. And I would expect that from anybody I'm in the rooms with. Thank you for letting me share.
Chia.
Thanks. I have a question for Matt, but I'll just take the opportunity to say that my personal view on the question we just raised is that the people, believers, have plenty of meetings. They don't need to come to the one I've struggled so hard to make atheists friendly. Like, if they don't like it in that meeting, they have so many places they can go. Okay, my question for Matt is this. We were not able to make it without being listed worldwide. Do you have any sense of why this worked for you and it didn't work for us? Can you make any guess about that?
Timing, that's got to be all. It was the right moment. There was no in-person option at that time to start. And then I've just been persistent as a dog. I've just stayed with it. There were meetings I did when it was just me by myself. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to keep going. And the next week, two people showed up and they kept coming. So I just stuck with it. I think you guys have more meetings going than I do, but persistence is all I can say. I work the Google angle, right? Website, work in search, posting on Reddit, you know, in the in the appropriate places and just trying to get interest. And slowly I've accumulated people who care, who want to participate in the mission and believe in it and feel growth. I mean, that's really been the biggest part.
Thank you.
All right, Judy, Joe has gotten us together by means of this convention. Good to meet you.
Oh, yes, finally, after our playing email tag for all this time. Nice to meet your picture. I can't find you right now. Anyway, hi, I'm Judy. And Matt, I loved your not wanting labels. And I've been feeling that way for years. So I liked you bringing that up. Thank you. And I think maybe I'm just going to announce I'm in three programs. I think I'll just announce myself as a seeker after recovery. That kind of really says what I'm about. And I got here late. Jim, I didn't hear you. I have to get the tape. I'm so sorry. But I liked also your what I like at secular meetings, and I've been going for a long time. I'm mostly with the Cottonwood group out of Arizona, although I live in California. And I go to a lot of the regular meetings as well. I go wherever my needs get met and I enjoy myself rather than suffer through. I even went to that Santa Monica conference, the first one of this group. My question is, I used to go to meetings in Las Vegas where they had all the people together. Gamblers, alcoholics, overeaters, codependents, Al-Anon, blah, blah, blah. And there wasn't any mention of the illness. We were all seeking the same kind of recovery. And has there been any thought of that? Was that already mentioned at this meeting that I missed? But I'd love to go to one of those kind of all the 12 steps, just get in your room and talk about your recovery rather than your drunkalogue. And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. It sounded that way. I don't mean that. And I also like that at secular meetings, we get to quote other books besides the literature. We get to be bringing in anything anyone might value, and we chew on it together. Humanists, I guess. Anyway, so there's my question. If anyone knows of a total 12-step meeting, anybody's welcome. Any?
I believe Judy, I'd love to invite you to We Agnostics ACOA meetings.
Again, though, that's one group.
Yeah, but we do not limit ourselves to any one particular recovery modality. We acknowledge that those of us who ended up in recovery have trauma and that we have a problem with our thinking.
Okay. So is that this list here in the chat?
No, but I can make sure that our website is listed and our calendar is on our website.
I would like that. Plus my email's right there under my name. If you could email me a link to find
it. Real quick, TUSNUA, TUSNUA.EU is a free thinkers group out of Ireland that does all recoveries meetings.
Can you send that to Kyle? Can he send you a message and post that in the chat? And Julianne, if you send something to Kyle, he can post the website in the chat. And Judy, I did want to, it's kind of an odd bit of experience, but in the Christian world, their 12-step sort of groups are for all recoveries. And I have at least one friend from overeaters who said that really doesn't work for him because in his particular part of the world, it's all pretty much mostly people who have trouble with alcohol. And as an overeater, he doesn't get. So I think there are two sides of that. I think, yes, there's a space for a generic recovery group. And there are things like co-counseling and Mankind Project. And gosh knows, there are many things out there also that don't use the 12 steps. But then there is, I think, some value for the focused stuff. So, Claudia, Julianne, did you have a question or are you up for another?
Yeah, I actually did have a question.
Sorry.
And that's okay. And I sent the website address to Kyle. Mine is actually a comment and then a question. We Agnostics ACOA has never apologized for being secular, period. I'm one of the co-founders, I'm an atheist. I'm a proud atheist. And I did not ask permission. You know, it was just, I listed the meeting. I sent the information into WSO and it was listed as a secular meeting. And it is better to ask forgiveness than permission, I guess, is the way to put it. And I don't see that Al-Anon would have any problems listing a secular meeting, but I don't go to Al-Anon anymore, although I spent a lot of years in Al-Anon. My question is, We Agnostics is 2.5 years old, and almost from day one, I have had people asking me to separate from ACA, to take We Agnostics Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families and separate it from the parent organization. And what I have been saying is go do service at the world service level for a year and then come back and talk to me. And I was simply wondering if others who have started their secular aspects of their program have had people asking them to separate from the parent organization, and how have you handled it? And that's my question. Thanks.
I know of at least one fellowship that might want to comment on that, but.
Are you talking about ours?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think every fellowship is different. And we were told, you know, if we don't toe the line, we had to leave. So, and that's what inspired me with my group of friends to do our own separate website for secular overeaters, which is not the same as secular OA. But it's hard when you're on the outside. Like, how do people find out about you? And actually, you know, more and more people, if they're Googling secular programs, you know, they do find us. And maybe we might be in a better place right now to leave. I personally don't want to have that much to do with OA. I don't participate in intergroup anymore. And I don't even go, I only go to secular meetings now. And I know Jim is, you know, very enmeshed right now in OA. I don't think it's going to take too long to make the changes that I want to see. I want to be able to use the kind of steps at my meeting that, you know, work for the people at my meeting. I want to be able to read literature that works for us. I don't want to read all this, you know, male God heavy literature that we get from our program. And they're not going to change anytime soon. So I prefer to work outside of the system.
You know, I'll just say, if there's a theme you might have heard from my comments and Jenny's, there are like two worlds. One is people who are in OA, who are secular and don't know about us yet. And so that's what our service board is for, is how do you reach people who are currently in OA? And then, as Jenny said, there are a number of the meetings that we call secular OA meetings that choose not to identify with, they don't register with OA, so they actually are already separate. And I don't know, but my view is you'd need to do both, but anyhow, Ken?
I just wanted to quickly add some perspective from Narcotics Anonymous. Well, my experience getting our meeting registered back in 2015 was fantastic. You know, we had to have, there was a rule, you had to run the meeting for 4 weeks and then you had to go to the area and you had to present it. And I went through all of that process. And it was unanimously voted in favour. And, you know, they made me lead the Serenity Prayer, but that was just their way of being funny, you know. But NA World Services is very respectful and receptive. You know, the language in the literature is a barrier that will probably never be, you know, will always be there, you know. But you know, when we asked them about the World Convention and getting a spot there, they were like, yes, you know, yes, fantastic, now's the time. And, you know, inclusivity and diversity are really, really at the forefront of their thinking at the moment. And, you know, sure, they're a bit tied up with the rules around the literature, but, you know, there's ways around that. And as I said before, the SPAD, the Spiritual Principle of Day reading that's come out is very progressive. It's very contemporary and very progressive. And it doesn't, if you use it as a theme for the meeting, it doesn't take every meeting down the God road, you know, which is what the previous Just for Today book did, you know. So that's my 2 cents. Jim, oh, well, Claudia has her hand up.
Thank you, Claudia. And then Kevin, I guess.
I know you're running out of time.
Oh, so it's the color of the hand. Good job, Claudia.
I'm trying to match it.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks. I've been recovering in Al-Anon and AA since 1990 and would consider myself old guard, not old guard for AA, but old guard for Al-Anon. And it's fascinating to hear all of this conversation. It's just been in the last few months that I've been wandering in this direction. And so really what I'm thinking, listening to all of this conversation now, is that what's troubled me the most about the religious aspect has been, it's not the religion per se, it's what it comes with. And so I think it's really important to be mindful of that and not repeat it, because it could be repeated without the religion. And so to begin with, elitism. When I hear people say, God saved me, and quite frankly, I look at the room and I see people with different skin color and I'm like, oh, good. I bet God wouldn't save them. I go bananas. It's really hard. So elitism, I saw the 1 minute. The proselytizing, so dishonesty, saying that you're not religious when somebody gave me a Bible when I was new in Al-Anon. That was a no-go. The thing with closing prayer, I've personally experienced anti-Semitism when I said maybe the Lord's Prayer isn't a good idea. So, you know, as people are talking about being open. And then I would end saying the isolation. I also cringe when I hear people not using the phone, not reaching out, but I talked to God today. Very dangerous. And so really important to, I think, to consider the underlying themes that come with religion, as opposed to just looking at the surface of secular versus not. Thanks so much for the conversation.
Oh, thank you, Claudia. I didn't hear a question, so is that okay? We'll just, great contribution. Kevin, do you have a question? Good to see you, by the way. Haven't seen you for a while.
Well, if you weren't getting up at 3:30 in the morning Pacific time, it'd be okay. Yeah. And so I wanted to thank all of you for your service. I've been to all of these meetings. And there is a fellowship out there that's sort of across the board. It's called IPAN. They have a couple meetings listed on the International Secular website. Oh, maybe, you know, the TMF website should have it on the bottom there, chat. And yeah, thanks to all of you for your service and, you know, for being whatever, so courageous and willing to stand out there in the cold, you know. You know, I'm sure those battles were all extremely similar and all very isolating. And, you know, people like me get to come along, you know, a year and a half ago I started secular. And, oh, it's just a treat. Go to the team up website and pick a fellowship, you know. I try and target OA. Gosh, I wish we could do more outreach. I mean, 140 million obese people in America, there's got to be a market for it. But yeah, my question would be, you know, a utopian idea, how do we get them to evolve to have this be a mainstream part of it? Good luck with that answer.
Kevin, say your question. How do we get the 12-step programs to evolve in a way that includes seculars?
Yeah, and it seems like OA is going to be perhaps the most difficult.
I don't know. Well, it's addressed to OA. I'll say a word. I think Jenny's probably right. It's not going to happen quickly. On the other hand, they did make accommodations. I mean, who knows why there was a special focus drop down for atheists and agnostics before we got there. I mean, that was there. The special focus service board that I'm now the chair of, for heaven's sake, it's there. So, I mean, there are some at the margins, at least, but I do agree with Jenny's that it's unlikely the whole thing is going to change quickly. Matt, are you commenting on this or were you at another question?
No, I was just going to, you know, it occurred to me, talking about like the challenges of marketing and such and the need for like an overarching organization or something. But that, you could very easily put together, you know, a website that markets all of the groups here that we're talking about, and then someone can pick and choose, and at least it can solve the marketing issue. If that's the main thing holding anyone to their, you know, traditional religious organization, is just marketing, and that's the major benefit of being able to be found, I think that's a solvable problem. And maybe we could all work together to make that kind of overarching.
I don't know, but are we all listed on secular? Well, one process point. We have this breakout room indefinitely. So our ending point is 7:30 and nobody has to stay on after that. So I'm not asking that. But if people are excited and want to keep talking, we can keep if there are more questions, we can spill over. I assume, but I don't know, and I will check, that all of our secular fellowships are listed somewhere. I don't even know that there is a secular AA website anymore, but I'll bring it up with Joe and John S. Julianne, were you on this topic? And I know Judy's got a question, and I
was on this topic, yes.
Go ahead.
ACA Agnostica website is happy to list other secular fellowship websites. So I can put our email address in the chat area. And if you have a website that you would like cross-listed with us, we would be happy to do so.
Cool. John, do you have a question, or are you on this topic or a separate? Because Julie is next with the questions. Judy is next.
I have a comment issue. There are websites that attempt to be a clearinghouse, but there are too many of them.
And it's a mess, right? It's not helpful.
You don't know where to go for the one inclusive clearinghouse.
Yeah, it's a lot of garbage out there because it doesn't have a purpose.
Interesting. again, if Judy is being so patient, and time's running out, so Judy, you should at least get your question during the 7:30, and then I'll cycle back with John and Julianne.
Hi, I'm Judy, and I'm a cannabis addict. Got anything for me? I'm also an atheist. So thank you. I would like to be able to find some secular cannabis meetings. Thank you.
Well, shows you how much I know about everything, but Ken, I assume that's a question you've dealt with before.
Oh, look, Narcotics Anonymous just addresses addiction as including all mind and mood altering substances. So we don't actually specify, there's a very strong emphasis on not stressing or emphasizing any particular drug. So it's not really our thing, but anybody's welcome at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, irrespective of what they used. And probably even if their addiction is a process addiction.
Cool. John?
I thought you might like a Canadian perspective. I don't know. I go to secular meetings here, and we had a struggle to get them going. But now they're going fairly strong. There's more than one, and there's probably three or four around. I've been a member of AA for 30 years or so. But I had a struggle when I came in because I came in sober. I was 2 years sober, but as the saying would go, I was crazier than a loon. And I decided not to drink. That's all I did. And so when they talk about power, a higher power, I needed a higher power because I was the higher power because I had the answer to stopping drinking, but not the answer to staying sane. So I needed the higher power. And so the concept of higher power became group, and then I struggled with sponsors and stuff like that. But I had sponsors who were drinking and getting up and getting the chip, and that all they were saying they were sober and they weren't sober. So I had struggles with that, and I had sponsors who were probably wet brains because I didn't really want to stay in AA because I wanted to drink more than I wanted to do anything else in my life. I don't know why. I was a blackout drinker from the start. I'm starting understanding some of that stuff. When my son got hooked on cocaine, I was glad I was still in the program for sure. And when he came to to the program. They threw him out, and of course he went to Narcotics Anonymous. And but he says that, you know, there was too many questions to him about saying he was an addict. So of course I was an obstinate alcoholic. So I keep saying that I'm an addict, and I adopt Gabor Maté's definition of addiction. And Gabor Maté is one of our doctors up here, who's pretty famous for addiction. He's one of the advocates for making all drugs legal. Take it out of the hands of the governments who are making more of us addicts than less of us addicts. So, but he's quite a fellow. And I listened to your Dr. Koob, and I thought he was quite fascinating too, because he has a different inflection. Although he says trauma plays a part in addiction, but he said his inflection too was that he also said that our own drinking caused us to have biochemical brain disorder that gave us a lethargic, or led us into depression and led us into not liking reality. And the alcoholic's real problem is reality.
John, can you see the warning when it comes up?
That's fine. I'm gone.
Okay. You know, it occurred to me, I'm so secular, we didn't do anything to start this meeting, but what the heck, since it's vaguely associated with 12 steps, I personally have come to love the Serenity Prayer where you use, it's the agnostic one, Julianne, the surrender to know the one I can and so forth. Would you maybe lead us in that? We'll break so that if people want to leave, but as I said, you're all welcome to stay, and thank you all, particularly the presenters, but all of you who are here supporting us and trying to make this, our lives better and the world better. But we'll do a little serenity prayer, and maybe you can say it quickly and then we'll say it together.
Okay. I do want to say that I did send Kyle the email address. I just haven't seen it pop up yet. It's weagnosticsacoa@gmail.com. In ACA, we do the ACA version of the serenity statement, and it starts, "Today I seek the serenity to accept the people that I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me."
So maybe we'll say that as a group, and then everybody's welcome to stay, but it's also people looking for a signal that they can hide and not behave badly, inappropriately, socially. Let's say it again, Julianne.
Today, the serenity.
The serenity.
To accept the people I cannot change.
The courage to change
the one I can. And the wisdom
to know that one is me.
Oh. Cool.